Hello everyone, I'm David Latchman, and welcome to the Science Bloggers Podcast. My guests this week are Chelsea Boudou and Daniel Pointez. Chelsea and Daniel are graduate students at Michigan State University. Chelsea is a biomedical engineer who studies what happens to the bladders of people with spina bifida as it becomes overstretched. Daniel is an experimental nuclear physicist who works at the National Superconducting Cyclotron, where he studies rare isotopes. They also started MSU SciComm, a student-run organization that promotes science communication at Michigan State University and helps students communicate the science they do in clear and engaging ways. They are also the host of The Sci-Files, a student radio show and podcast where they talk to other MSU students about research they do. So, hi, Chelsea and Daniel, how are you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, we're doing really great.
I'm fine. So, what are you guys up to?
Just sitting at home.
Yeah, I guess.
The quarantine life.
Yeah, I guess everyone's doing that lately. I guess it's probably affected you as graduate students.
Yeah, we have to do all of our work at home now, but we're still getting stuff done.
That's good. So, who wants to start? Why didn't you start by telling the audience a little bit something about yourselves?
Sure. My name is Daniel Pointez. I am an experimental nuclear physicist that works at the National Superconducting Cyclotron Laboratory here at Michigan State University's campus. I do research on high-precision mass measurements of rare isotopes that don't exist anywhere else on the Earth, except when we create them with our accelerator here at the laboratory.
And I'm Chelsea Boudou. I'm a biomedical engineering PhD student here at Michigan State University. I study what happens when the bladder overstretches in regards to spina bifida, which is a developmental neural tube defect. Daniel and I together co-host the Sci-Files on Impact 89 FM, and we also started MSU SciComm.
Oh, that's cool. So the show, how did the idea for that show come about?
The idea came about after we attended a conference on science communication called CompSciCon Michigan. It gave us our first experience to what is science communication and how can PhD students do science communication. So we thought there's not much graduate student representation on the local student radio, so that could be a way that we would make an impact, play on words with the station name there, but also connect the mid-Michigan community with science that's happening here at Michigan State University.
So I'm assuming that it's the general public from Michigan who listens to this show. Am I right?
We do have a good amount of listeners in Michigan. That is where the most of our listeners are, but we have listeners from all over the world. Like over 20 countries have listened to us, and over half of the United States has listened to us. We air on a Michigan radio station, the Michigan State University radio station, Impact 89 FM. But after that, our episodes are podcasted. So that's how everyone else is able to listen to it.
Okay, that's cool. So for, I don't know what you call a native Michigan, someone from, is it Michigana? Is that the correct term for a native from Michigan?
Close, actually. It's pronounced Michigander.
Michigander. Good to know. Don't want to insult anyone. So how have Michiganders responded to the show?
I would say very positive. In fact, we just won our first award this past March with the Michigan Association of Broadcasters, where we won first place in the student competition for talk show.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So as far as student response, how do they feel about talking about their research that they do?
Students are used to giving presentations about their research. So whenever they get there, they can be a little bit nervous because it's a radio station and there's mics and stuff, and it's not something that we're all used to. So Danny and I take the time before the episodes to actually talk to them a little bit about how to properly communicate their science, because like we said earlier, we also run MSU SciComm, so we know about science communication, and that helps them, and we warm up and we talk to them. So it's a new experience for them that they really appreciate.
So what sort of tips do you typically give a graduate student who's about to be on your show?
Well, like I said, they have really never been in a radio studio before. So we first teach them how to talk into a mic. Then we also talk to them about how they should not use too much jargon. For example, whenever they're talking about their research, they're used to talking to people in their field that are used to the terminologies that they're discussing. But a child may hear it because it's on the radio, or they could hear it through a podcast, and they might not know what that word is. So we take the time to go through some of the words and the definition terminology as well.
So it sounds like you also do some SciComm training as you prepare your guest for your show. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's really important because not many grad students have the opportunity to actually practice science communication. So it's perfectly natural to feel a little nervous whenever somebody walks into the studio. It's a little intimidating, but I think it's a really cool experience for them at the end. And every time we finish, they always tell us how much of a positive experience that they've had interviewing with us.
We do a lot of outreach activities, and they come and they volunteer too. So I think they did have a positive experience if they keep coming back.
That's good. So what can you tell me about Michigan SciComm? Is it a group, or what exactly is it?
It's an organization that was started back in November 2018. We got a group of graduate students together that had a common interest in science communication and launched the full organization in the spring of 2019. There we had a variety of different meetings where we provided training on things like how to do an elevator pitch, as well as an outreach event with the MSU Science Festival, where we brought in students and the local community to come to the Institute of Quantitative Health to do different activities like extracting strawberry DNA or getting tours of the local facility. And then in the fall, we had a really big event focused on science art, where we even had a YouTube star physics girl come in and perform our keynote speech. And it was an incredible event. But then following that art exhibition show, we actually did a SciFiles event where we released a beer and had our interviewees come in and give little flash talks about updates on their research. And it was also an opportunity for the public to actually challenge the scientists in an event that we called Beat the Scientists, which is part of the beer release. And in doing so, the general audience was able to challenge the scientists to different arcade games. And if they won, they were able to get some swag.
Yeah, that was a really fun event because we had it at a bar arcade. So at the top, people were talking about their science and drinking beer that scientists brewed. And then at the bottom, they were playing games with scientists.
Wow. So it sounds like you're doing a lot to engage with the public and tell them about what happens at Michigan State. Or any other graduate students who do things like what you do? Like, do they have their own radio shows or blogs, podcasts, or anything?
In our organization, MSU SciComm, we have a variety of students. We have undergraduate, we have graduate students, and students that are also like DO, PhD students, and things like that. Everyone will pick basically what they want to focus on. For example, like Danny was saying, MSU SciComm does science art, writing, speaking, and advocacy engagement. And if you want to do one and not the other, you can do it. Outside of MSU SciComm, there are some things like science podcasts. For example, there's speaking science, there's serving up science, and everyone has something different that they focus on. And for blogs, there are a few different blogs out there. For example, our vice president of marketing has a blog called PR Bytes, and our science literature chair is the one that runs the MSU SciComm blog. So last week we had something about mental health, because one of our episodes actually was youth suicide awareness, and that interviewee contacted us and said that he wanted to write a piece about how suicide rates are affected by the coronavirus.
Your individual research projects, let's talk a little bit about your graduate school studies. Who wants to go first? Do you want to explain it?
Sure, absolutely. So I gave a little hint at what I do earlier when I provided that introduction, but to expand on my research a little bit more, my thesis is actually composed of two parts. First part is a very rare isotope mass measurement of an isotope of silicon. Now, isotopes are just different species of the same element, and they differ by the number of neutrons. And silicon, the one that I'm interested in, has 24 protons and neutrons inside of the nucleus. And the reason why we're interested in measuring how much mass it has is because it allows us to constrain these interstellar explosions known as type 1 X-ray bursts. they produce a lot of different nuclei whenever they're undergoing the thermonuclear explosion on the surface of a neutron star. And by having these masses well understood, we can reproduce through computer simulation the amount of light that is emitted by these explosions as a function of time. And then the other part of my thesis involves building a gas cell that's going to be filled with helium and will have an entrance window that is going to be made out of a material called silicon nitride. And the purpose of it is to convert molecular ion beams into atomic ion beams. And then it'll be transported across the gas cell to the end, where it will be extracted through the use of an RF carpet, which is a fancy way of saying it's just a bunch of electrodes that are arranged in a circular fashion that transport ions really fast to an exit nozzle. And by doing so, it'll help not only my mass measurement group, but it'll also be important for other groups at my laboratory that do things like measuring charged radii of nuclei or sending it to the reaccelerator for nuclear astrophysics experiments.
Okay, sounds interesting. So what about you, Chelsea?
Like I said earlier, I'm a biomedical engineer, and that's a field that it can be very broad. My topic of my thesis is particular with spina bifida. So spina bifida occurs usually because a mother is diabetic or because the mother does not have the proper nutrition whenever she is developing the child. Within these first few weeks of development, that nutrition can really be effective of it. The neural tube that is forming is basically the spine for a baby, and it's not closing properly without these proper nutritions. So my research is looking at how the nutrition affects the neural tube closure. But we go a little bit deeper than that, and we also look at pathways. The one that I'm looking at particularly is with IRE1. IRE1 has to do whenever the cell is stressed and if the proteins are not being folded properly in the endoplasmic reticulum, also known as the ER, then the ER will go through that stress. And this can just be really bad because whenever this is occurring, then the proteins aren't being folded properly. And I am looking in my research particularly at the extracellular matrix of this. The extracellular matrix is composed of proteins such as elastin and collagen. Elastin is like, think of the stretchy part of the extracellular matrix, and collagen is what brings it back together. And this is important particularly with the organ that I'm looking at called the bladder. The bladder is something that we usually take for granted because if you drink a lot of water, then you feel that pressure inside and you go and you're fine. But not everyone can use the bathroom perfectly. Children that are born with spina bifida, they have this neural tube defect, but it's in the lower area of their spine. So whenever it's affecting that lower area of their spine, it's also affecting their bladder. And when they're born, their bladder doesn't work properly. So a lot of them have to have a tube stuck up them, also known as a catheter. And that's how they have to void their bladder for the rest of their life. And if you have a tube stuck up you for your whole life, then your bladder isn't working properly and it gets even worse and worse. So that collagen and elastin, the ratio of it ends up imbalanced. So the bladder is not stretching and it's not coming back together the way how it should. So another part of stress that I look at, not only with the cells in a molecular aspect, but is also a mechanical aspect. And we've even like 3D printed different devices that can stretch these cells. And I look at all these different things. I look at the nutrients. I look at how the cell stretch affects this and the extracellular matrix to see how is that bladder really working and how can we help it get back to how it should. And if the bladder ends up really not working and malfunctioning, then it affects the kidneys because the kidneys are right before it and the kidneys are what filter the urine to the bladder. And then that's how a lot of the patients pass away because of kidney failure.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's tragic. I mean, I had an idea what spinal bifida was. I'd heard about it before, but I didn't know that there were so many problems associated with the condition. Hopefully you can find something. You can do something.
Yeah, it's pretty sad because 1 in 1,000 births in the United States are affected by this because mothers may not know that they're pregnant the first month and then they're not taking that right amount of folic acid. So it really affects the development then.
Yeah, hopefully something more can be done in the future.
Yeah, hopefully.
So in all the time that you've learned about science communication, is there anything that you'd like to pass on to people about why to do it, why it's so important, beside talking in a less jargony way?
Absolutely. Science communication is really important because that's what helps science actually get disseminated, for example, at different conferences through posters or oral presentations. But it's also what helps provide motivation for funding from these different government agencies that are funding these different science projects. If nobody's talking to the people about why their science is important and how it has an impact on society, then the funding's going to stop. And I think it's really important for people to practice that because it'll make them better communicators whenever they're trying to talk about their research, whether it's to their own family or to someone that's interested in a topic that has never met a scientist before. So people want to know about what's going on in these different science scenarios. It just takes the scientists to go out and be themselves and share what they're doing in their laboratories and to give people an idea of what their experiences are like. And I think that's really enriching for the general public.
I think you're very correct on that, Daniel, because, you know, when you look at it for the past few years, especially in the U.S., funding for science has been slashed to a really disturbing degree. And now that we have a global pandemic, now we're dealing with, you know, the SARS-CoV-2 outbreak, you know, as around the world, we're dealing with people who have to deal with COVID-19 on a daily basis. You see, like, the need for effective science communication, because it's hopefully going to lead to science funding that politicians are going to, like, put money into these things that we need. So everyone needs to play their part and get that message out.
Yeah, I agree. It's not only a global pandemic that people need to be communicating science about, but it definitely opens up people's eyes because there are other things going on, like more than just climate change. Like, there are things having to do with our water, with our food, with mental health. And this is really why Danny and I started the Sci-Files at MSU SciComm, because we know that there are so many topics out there that people don't even realize have to do with science. For example, we're coming out with an episode about how communities react to sexual assault and how they can basically come together and do different policy reforms and have support and how the community can support. And people don't usually think of science with that, but they don't realize that that's psychology. And I think that if scientists communicated what they did more, people would really realize that there's science in everything and that it can be fun in many different ways. People usually think of science as, oh, that it's hard, that it's a textbook, that it's something that they get, like, a lot of anxiety when they think of it. And they don't realize that it's so great because maybe it wasn't communicated to them properly.
Yeah, and I think the other aspect of it, besides the anxiety that most people, you know, feel when they take a science subject or science is being communicated to them, is that they feel they need to be scientists to understand that. And I think one of the good things about science communication is that we can tell people, no, you don't need to. You know, this is just something that's cool, that's interesting. And as our world becomes more and more technologically advanced, these issues sort of, like, come to the forefront. So a public is going to need to understand these issues to tackle future problems. And that's so important. Tell me about some of your policy efforts.
As a disclaimer, the work that I do at the laboratory has no relation to any of the activism efforts that I'm involved with MSU SciComm. It's one thing to talk about science communication, but it's a completely another animal to actually perform science communication, because there is a difference. And as leaders of this organization, we pride in ourselves in being practitioners of science communication, whether it's through the Sci-Files or through different political actions. Some of them include myself, where I have written a white paper that outlines policy recommendations for the United States government to follow in regards to a nuclear weapons treaty known as New START, which is short for the New Strategic Arms and Reduction Treaty, which is a bilateral treaty between us and the Russian Federation. It is responsible and has led to the reduction in both of our nuclear arsenals down to levels that are very small comparatively to when they used to be during the Cold War. but it's in danger right now of expiring within a year. And if it does happen, it'll be the first time since 1972 that there will be a period of time that there are no treaties that exist between us and Russia in regards to our nuclear arsenal. And remember, it's important to keep in mind that we still have 10,000 nuclear weapons over that number between us and the Russians. So it's still a prevalent issue in today's day and age, just as important as climate change, I would argue, actually. And then in terms of another thing that I did, I actually wrote an op-ed for the Lansing State Journal, which is a local publication here in mid-Michigan. And the reason why is because I was condemning the actions of a nonprofit organization that was interested in burying Canada's high-level nuclear waste along the shores of Lake Huron, around 1,600 feet below sea level. Now, while it sounds safe, nobody's actually ever been able to successfully deal with their nuclear waste. And there are some initiatives that have made headway, but maybe burying it next to a Great Lake isn't the best idea for the local mid-Michigan ecology. So those are just some of the different things that I've done over the last year just to promote science activism.
I think it's awesome that you're doing that. I think not many people realize from the time when the Cold War ended how many treaties were put in place to help reduce the number of nuclear weapons that we had, you know, between the US and the Soviet Union and then eventually Russia. And, you know, if we forget that and there are no more treaties in place, there's nothing that's going to stop anyone from building more nuclear weapons. And that's not something we need. And, you know, I think that nuclear waste thing that you're doing as well, I think that's really cool. So awesome. And what about you, Chelsea? Is there anything else you'd like to say to?
I guess the last thing that I could say is that this year MSU SciComm is also doing another science art exhibition, and this is one that we are going to be expanding to internationally. So last year we had scientists and artists come together to create these art pieces, and they were mainly from the mid-Michigan area. But this year, since we are in a different kind of state because there's a global pandemic going on, we are also taking international contributions. So last year, our pieces were made by the people like from around here. So what we did was that we donated those pieces around the town. So you can go to a restaurant and to different, well, whenever things are open, you can go and you can see the artwork over there around the community. And that's what we want to do again, is the art pieces from this year, we want to donate it across the community and across the state as well. And people are already signing up to donate pieces to us. So they're going to send us science art pieces, and we will donate them to schools and to different places where we can spread the word about science. And especially science artists really do have an appreciation and knowledge of their work, and they really do appreciate the spread of the word of and want to promote whatever they're focused on, like if it's like neuroscience or something. So I'd like to say that anyone that's interested can go on msuscicom.org and they can fill out the form over there if they would like to do a science art piece for this. And thanks for having us.
That sounds awesome. And yeah, it was great having you too. And, you know, stay safe and healthy with everything that's going on.
Absolutely. You too. And thank you again for having us on your show.
Yeah. And hopefully we can do this again sometime in the future.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for joining me with Chelsea and Daniel, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Be sure to like, share, subscribe, or leave a comment wherever you listen to this episode. Anything you do goes a long way to supporting this channel. And I look forward to you joining me on the next episode when I talk to a new science communicator.